Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on Earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my...
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
And hello, welcome in another week of Things Live here on the Hoosier Report. Glad to have you with us. We do this each weekday at 11 o'clock. Most days you can catch the replay at 3 o'clock here on the Big X. And of course, we're streaming online. We've got our podcast up and rolling every afternoon that many of you listen to us that way. And no matter how you catch the show, we're just glad to have you along with us. And getting into a different time, today marks the last day of the 2018-19 college basketball season, Virginia and Texas Tech in the national championship game tonight. And I think it's a very, very interesting national championship game. If, you know, some people say it's not as sexy of a game as what you want the national championship to be. Yeah, there's no maybe Zion Williamson in the game, but I think clearly two hot basketball teams, two basketball teams that generally play the game the right way. And, of course, Texas Tech has done so much of it. Virginia as well from the defensive end of the floor, which is exciting to see teams that prize defense every bit as much, if not more, even so, than offense find success on a national stage in the NCAA tournament. Obviously, from an IU standpoint, the biggest news today coming out of the weekend is Coach Bob Knight making his return very unexpectedly, at least to the public, to the fans, to us, to the IU campus, believed to be his first official visit, I guess you could say, where maybe IU staff was involved since he's been fired from the school many, many years ago. He showed up at a baseball game, was with one of the director of the IU varsity club, escorted in on an IU golf cart, had police with him. Very, very surprising. Of course, he was in Indiana. We knew that, or at least he was on Thursday night at Center Grove High School for a speaking engagement. There was a lot of coverage coming out of the engagement Thursday night into Friday that, you know, he was typical Bob Knight, still witty, still funny, but obviously at times had some struggles with memories and details and things like that, which is sad to think about, no matter really what your specific thoughts on Bob Knight or his unwillingness to return to campus since he's been fired has been, despite many offers from the school and former players and different anniversaries that have passed where fans would love to have seen back in Assembly Hall. But there would be a time, I guess, and just as recent as I was thinking about the visit he had to Center Grove on Thursday, and I really didn't even mention it much on the school, the show. It came up in an interview last week with former IU player Steve Green, who was actually Bob Knight's first recruit in the spring of 1971 at Indiana, that he was going to be back in state, and that Dr. Green hoped to see him at Center Grove for that speaking engagement. But really, because of his unwillingness to return to the school, and because he passed the big anniversary of the undefeated national championship team recently, he's kind of lost some luster, I think, as far as IU news and something that you talk about on a regular basis. But with that being said, obviously you can't deny the career he had there, the success he had there, the foundation he built for IU basketball, where he started when he inherited the program with lots of troubles and struggles. But I guess the thing now is, now that he's returned to campus, and it wasn't just something where he showed up with his friend Bob Hamill, former Bloomington sports writer, but actually IU people involved, and it came out after the game from the IU baseball coach that he knew earlier in the week. He just couldn't tell anybody. Obviously, I guess my point is it was premeditated, the visit. It wasn't just spur of the moment. Hey, we're going to stop by for a baseball game. It's a beautiful day out before I go back home with his buddy from Bloomington. Obviously, there was a little bit of planning from someone, whether it was Coach Knight himself or Bob Hamill or whoever. There was some planning that went into that visit to make it all happen and to get the police escort and to get the golf cart ride, which I'm sure IU was quick to offer up, but they knew he was coming, was my point. So with that, since there's been some communication from someone there in the night camp and there's been some participation with the university helping him get to his seat and placing him in the press box and giving him that ride on a golf cart in luxury, you do have to wonder, could this be the opening, the beginning of, I don't want to say a rebuilt relationship between Bob Knight and the IU school or the IU administration, but could this open the door to another visit, maybe next basketball season? And again, you have to recognize Bob Knight is aging. You have to recognize, just like the Indianapolis Star article in Friday's newspaper said, you know, there clearly were some moments in his Center Grove speaking engagement Thursday night where you could tell that he was having some memory problems, very clearly. So maybe does that all compound and have him a little bit more willing to come back to a place that obviously over the years has meant a lot to him, even though it may have not ended in the way that he and others had hoped. So very interesting. I think that what that does, what the visit does over the weekend, it brings to me Bob Knight much more back into the IU fold as far as, hey, this is kind of worth thinking about. This is worth talking about. Is he going to come back to Bloomington at some point, maybe with his health failing a bit, it appears? Could that happen as soon as next season? Or was this just something simply that he and Bob Hamill wanted to see a baseball game? And it's always been long reported or long known that Bob Knight loves baseball. And maybe that's all it is. But it still is interesting to think about. It still is unexpected. It still was a moment when I saw the tweet over the weekend that he was back on campus, and you read those words that Bob Knight is back on IU's campus. It's just, it's not something you expect to see on a Saturday afternoon. So very interesting stuff. We'll talk some about that today as well. But again, the national championship game tonight, Final Four played out on Saturday. Bob Knight returning to IU over the weekend. Those are some big headlines coming out of a weekend where obviously Indiana's college basketball season has been over now for a few weeks, not making the NCAA tournament. But these are the kind of things that keep us going and keep us excited about everything surrounding IU basketball. Let's take a look at the guest lineup. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Segment one, we've got our Hoosier headlines, our news of the day presented by Hoopster Sports Grill in Jeffersonville. We'll take a look at a number of happenings over the weekend in segment one. Later in the program, segment two, Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. He will be with me. I believe Zach was at the baseball game on Saturday. We'll talk about not only a little IU baseball, it's that time of year. Their season is moving along quickly, but we'll talk about the Bob Knight visit with him and some other off-the-court topics with IU basketball as we move into off-season mode with the last day of college basketball and the season set to play out tonight with the national championship game. Later in the show, Chad Gilbert, Charlestown's athletic director and an IHSA executive board member. He's with me as always. On Mondays, we'll talk Final Four with Chad. He had a connection there with Bruce Pearl, his former coach at the University of Southern Indiana. We'll talk some other local headlines as well with Chad when he's with us today. That's the lineup presented by Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Mention the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison, and you'll get $1 off your box lunch at Honey Baked Ham. Let's take a look at some Hoosier headlines for the day. A summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news presented by Hoopster Sports Grill. And obviously, the big headline I've already mentioned, that's Bob Knight returning to the Bloomington campus over the weekend for the IU-Penn State baseball game. Probably that game will go down in memory of a lot of people that were there expecting just to see an early season Big Ten contest, and instead they get the memories of seeing Bob Knight or knowing Bob Knight was in attendance at that game. Also, at the Final Four, one of the many events, and this is a fairly new event. I think last year was the first year that it had happened, but there's a three-on-three tournament that features conferences. So the Big Ten Conference has a team of four players. The SEC has a team of four players. The mid-major conferences, I believe everybody that wants an entry is able to have one. One team per conference. I have no idea who selects the players, what the format of that is. But Juwan Morgan was on the Big Ten team, along with Jordan Murphy, Ethan Happ, and Glenn Watson Jr. They got off to a really, really good start. They went 3-0 in pool play, and they're because these guys have used up all of their college eligibility and because their teams are not in the Final Four or obviously the national championship, they can get paid. So going 3-0 in pool play, combined among those four guys, the team won $3,000 before they were eliminated. They actually lost to the Mid-American Conference by a score of 21-19 in the round of 16. And again, this is pretty neat. I actually logged on and watched some of the game with Juwan, one of his earlier pool play games. All the games are streaming online, very easy to get to. They're on social media, and good coverage of them. Good basketball. Three-on-three has really made a return. It's becoming, or it is, an Olympic sport. Will be played as part of the, I think it's the Summer Olympics pretty soon coming up. And obviously it's been pushed a lot by USA Basketball more recently in the junior NBA as a real way to teach kids. With less players on the floor, everybody's got to be part of the offense. Everybody has to guard somebody. It teaches angles and some basic parts of the game that maybe are easier to learn, and everybody has to learn in a three-on-three perspective as opposed to five-on-five. So interesting that this thing, I think, even the college three-on-three tournament, it's obviously sponsored. It obviously is I can't even remember the sponsor, but it's a beer. I think it's the Dos Equis maybe sponsors it. But obviously it's caught on, and there's some money behind it and some pretty good basketball being played. But Juwan Morgan and his team, they won a little bit of money before being eliminated in that round of 16. I talked some about this last week, about Texas Tech and Auburn and some of the players in the Final Four and what their final rankings were in their respective recruiting classes. And we also talked about the overall team rankings by class, by recruiting class. I think Rick Bozich, it was, of WDRB, did an average of the Final Four teams, their final recruiting class score over the last 4 years, and then did an average. And if I remember correctly, the highest class, the highest average four-year recruiting class was Auburn, I think, at number 17 or 16 or something like that. So no 1, 2, 3, no top five classes on average for anyone in this year's Final Four. But here's something interesting. Texas Tech, they're starting five. Tariq Owens, who got injured but came back in the game, 185th in the final rankings in the class of 2014, his senior year of high school. He was a three-star. Jarrett Culver, now he's on a lot of draft boards. He's expected to get drafted at the conclusion of this season when the NBA draft gets here in June. I mentioned this last week. He was 312th in the class of 2017. David Moretti, that's a name that should be somewhat familiar to IU fans. When he came over from Italy, I believe, he actually took a visit and considered Indiana. Kind of was late in his in the spring that he made a decision on where he would play college basketball. He was 132nd in the 2017 rankings. Also, I never can pronounce his name, Norentz Odasi, 358th in the class of 2014. He was a two-star. And the fifth starter for Texas Tech, Matt Mooney, unranked. No stars for him, playing for a national championship tonight with a defense-first mentality. Pretty interesting stuff. Also, I think it's worth noting, because Indiana has some scholarships to figure out what they're going to do with, and likely you would think that a graduate transfer, whether it's Joey Brunk and someone else, who knows what the situation could be, but two players, really maybe the two best performances in the Final Four game for Texas Tech, were graduate transfers. That's a rule change not too many seasons ago that really has had and continues to have a big impact, not just generally on college basketball, but even in the big moments, the Final Four in the national championship game. More and more you hear about a graduate transfer that not only comes in and gets to play immediately, but plays a big, big role, even though they've just been there for the off season, and then, of course, the course of that season as well. But two graduate transfers for Texas Tech. We'll see what path Indiana takes to fill some of their scholarships, I would think, here coming up soon. A couple other quick notes to wrap up this first segment. Hard to believe that travel ball, shoe basketball, AAU basketball, whatever general term you want to give to it is back. I guess it's really, from an IU perspective right now, it's hard to dig in and think about some of the players to follow this offseason and some of the younger classes, because with Romeo gone, with Forrester transferring, with Clifton Moore transferring, there are at least three scholarships currently open for IU to fill, even for next season. And obviously, Joey Brunk's in the discussion. There's graduate transfers galore that potentially something could work out with, even if it doesn't work out with Brunk. There are a couple players in the 2019 class that Indiana is continuing to follow and recruit. I think Quinones is making a official visit perhaps to the IU campus soon, has been the word. But it's hard to believe that underclassmen out there playing AAU shoe basketball, whatever you want to call it. And in fact, later this month in April is the first and only live period of the springtime for Division I coaches to get out and watch players. So pretty soon we'll have maybe a better idea on the class of 2020 and maybe even the class of 2021. Obviously, there are some real clear names we know Indiana is focusing on, but here soon we'll see where the IU staff is at on that weekend, who they really focus on that weekend, what in-state guys, maybe what Midwestern or out-of-state guys that they also take a look at. So there's plenty heating up from a recruiting perspective with AAU basketball back for the spring and summer, and of course graduate transfers and players transferring out of programs, all sorts of things. So a lot to follow, and Indiana has some scholarships immediately to play with, to work with here, for, even for to affect next season's roster. A couple other quick notes. Indiana North-South game presented by Hoosier Basketball Magazine was played yesterday at Martinsville, actually on Saturday at Martinsville High School. The South team won 153-135 over the North. Trace Jackson Davis, an IU signee, he led all scorers with 32 points, and Floyd Central's Kobe Barnes, he followed up Trace Jackson Davis with a nice 27-point effort in the win for the South team. I know Kobe also was back at it on Sunday at the HBCA All-Star Game in Bloomington, and I think he had almost just as much, if not even more, points and a good stat line in that Sunday All-Star Game as well. So some All-Star games, more so local games going on this weekend. Of course, you've got that national series of All-Star games. The McDonald's game is already in the book. The Jordan Brand Classic, which is where Trendon Watford, by the way, has said that he will announce his college decision. It's coming up here very soon. And, of course, the Indiana-Kentucky All-Star games take place later in the summer in June, right before the graduating seniors leave for college. So still lots of basketball being played out there, no question about it. Football note as well, IU gets a verbal commitment over the weekend from a current junior from Fort Wayne Dwinger, Bishop Dwinger High School. His name is Luke Wigington, and he commits to the Hoosiers over the weekend. Always good to see IU get, and really any school in state, get IU guys. He's an offensive tackle, by the way. Indiana guys, I should say, stay in state. So Luke Wigington, you can add him to the board for IU football as an in-state commit in the class of 2020 from Fort Wayne, Indiana. That's the headlines each day presented by Hoopster Sports Grill in Jeffersonville. Hoopsters is your hometown sports grill where hometown fans watch hometown teams play. Hoopsters was voted as best sports bar and best place to watch sports by the News and Tribune's Reader's Choice Awards. Hoopsters in Jeffersonville, where fun happens. We'll head to a commercial break. We'll come back with Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. We'll talk about Bob Knight back in Bloomington. We'll talk some other IU basketball, IU baseball a little bit as well with Zach after this on a Monday edition of the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
All right, we're back on this Monday program. Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star with us on the Hoosier Report. And Zach, obviously lots going on right now, off-season stuff, roster spots, a lot of things that we've already discussed. But one thing I did not see coming that you and I would be talking about on this Monday show when thinking about topics over the weekend was that Coach Knight returned to campus. That wasn't something I expected to bring up. How surprised were you to see Bob Knight arrive at the IU-Penn State baseball game on Saturday afternoon?
Yeah, I mean, of all the things, of all the venues that would have hosted that moment, I would not have picked that. I would not have guessed that. There's always a part of me that sort of wondered if Bob Knight ever did come back. And listen, I'd kind of gotten to a point where whenever anybody asked, even just casually, hey, do you think Bob Knight will come back, you know, I would just say, no, I really don't think so. But I always did kind of think that if he did, it would not be to fanfare. Like, it would just be sort of like he would just all but turn up. And I know Indiana kind of had enough advance warning just to make sure that they had a space from the press box to sit quietly and watch the game and, you know, enough security such that there was no mob scene or anything like that around him. And it seemed like, broadly speaking, everything kind of stayed calm and respectful anyway. But I always kind of imagined if it did happen, I thought it would be for obviously a basketball game, but that it would just be sort of, almost out of the blue in this way. And so it was. But again, for it to, you know, for it to be a baseball game against Penn State, yeah, that wouldn't have been anywhere near even my, like, top 10, top 15.
Let me ask, does this open the door, in your opinion, for more? Or are some of us making too much out of it that he was back for, we know, a speaking engagement on Thursday night? He was hanging with his buddy Bob Hamill, former sports writer, on Saturday, and they wanted to go to a baseball game. Your thoughts, could this lead to more? Did this open the door for a better relationship or a return to a basketball game?
I don't know. I mean, that's a good question, and I don't know that, you know, given Knight's general sort of private, I mean, he's maintained a pretty private life since he left ESPN, with the exception of those speaking engagements. He doesn't really do a ton of interviews. I know he obviously did that infamous, I guess you could say infamous, one with Dan Patrick a couple of years ago. I think my sort of educated, you know, guess would be that it's possible, and that it's also worth pointing out that, like, Knight has returned at times very privately in the past, what's been 19 years. That's something that's a little bit of an open secret in Indiana, that at different times, you know, professors or people that he maintained a relationship with hosted him back, if not on campus, then certainly in Bloomington at private functions and those sorts of things. But, you know, if he was gonna come to a basketball game, one would imagine, again, it wouldn't be something that would be announced. It wouldn't be something that would be, you know, Bob Knight in lights up on the marquee, and, you know, the strobe lights outside the arena, and tickets going for $500. It would just kind of be one of those where it was, hey, you know, maybe there's a team reunion or something, and he finally, you know, comes back and joins in, just arrives very, very quietly announced, you know, comes out, sort of pays his respects to the fans and whomever, and then just as quietly sort of departs again. So I guess at this point I wouldn't rule anything out. You know, we've already crossed the boundary into the unexpected when, you know, Bob Knight is pulling up to Bart Kaufman Field in a golf cart driven by John Bauer. But I also don't know that it's ever going to be one of those where it's, you know, it's announced weeks ahead of time, Bob Knight will be at this game, everybody come, make sure you don't sell your ticket, you know, whatever it may be.
Zach Osterman, Indianapolis Star, our guest. And again, had he just shown up to the game with Bob Hamill, I would chalk it up to two guys, two old friends that love baseball and love sports, want to reminisce on a beautiful Saturday afternoon for some baseball over a baseball game. But when you see, and you mentioned the guy by name, when you see the guy from the IU varsity club driving the golf cart with Coach Knight in it, you see that the university has sent some security escorts and things to help him navigate the crowd. And then you read the quotes, or at least I read the quotes from the baseball coach on Saturday evening that said he knew about it earlier in the week and it was so hard to not tell people because he grew up just down the road and idolized Bob Knight, et cetera, et cetera. When you know that there's a little university involvement, obviously that it was premeditated, it was planned to a certain degree, that does trigger you, at least me, it triggered my wondering a little bit more than just a random drop by or a random appearance for whatever reason.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think there was enough advance notice so that Indiana could be ready. And John Bauer, the guy I mentioned, actually works in event management for Indiana and is kind of one of the lead people in terms of making sure that just everything is functioning at a game day. I mean, like, John sometimes sort of feels like a headquarters unto himself in terms of just everything he manages kind of all at once. But there was still also a very clear desire to keep it as quiet as possible, to keep it sort of as low-key as possible. And that's what makes me think that if Bob Knight ever were to return in a wider setting like a basketball game or even a football game, that it would probably stay the same, that it wouldn't be something that would be marketed up to the hilt. It would be, you know, hey, you know, I think we might have a special guest at halftime if you want to hang around, and you know, that sort of thing. And it would just sort of be quiet and respectful, and then Knight would move on. Because again, he really has. I know the Dan Patrick interview made a lot of waves, but that has really been the exception rather than the rule. Bob Knight has not done, has maintained a very sort of low public profile other than speaking engagements since leaving ESPN and since, I guess you would say, you know, kind of going into full-on retirement.
We're talking with Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. Zach is with us Mondays to talk all things IU. Since we're talking about Coach Knight at the IU baseball game, we probably don't talk about it as much as we should. I know IU baseball has become a popular commodity. They've produced some good teams, and it's still very early in their season, but maybe an early update on how things are going for the Hoosiers on the baseball field and what to expect, what type of season you get a read from the team that this could go on to be.
Yeah, it's been kind of a strange season for Indiana. They're 19-12, which isn't terrible by any means. And they're 7-2 in the Big Ten, which ties them for second with Nebraska. And there's kind of some weird stuff going on, and this can happen sometimes in the Big Ten baseball standings. Like, first place is Michigan, but Michigan's only 4-1. You can get games moved around. You can even get games canceled. Obviously, sort of the perils of Midwestern baseball. But among teams that have played a full Big Ten schedule to this point, Indiana is tied for first with Nebraska. And there's some things Indiana's doing really, really well. If you look at, like, the Big Ten standings, for example, Indiana is third in the Big Ten in ERA. Indiana, I think, is still, if I'm not mistaken, leading the Big Ten by a heavy distance. Yeah, they got 56 home runs. The second closest teams, Ohio State and Michigan, only have 27. So Indiana has literally twice as many home runs as anyone else in the league, but they also have more strikeouts than anyone else in the league. They've also had some weird, you know, for lack of a better term, maybe weird implosions. They hosted Wright State. This is obviously, I guess I should have mentioned, Jeff Mercer's first game or first season in charge after taking over for Chris Lemonis, who moved to Mississippi State in the offseason. Mercer came from Wright State. You know, Indiana put together about like a 9-game winning streak, then lost to Kent State, and then came back and won a series at Maryland, then hosted Wright State and got beat 15-4. Then got shut out by Penn State on Friday night, only to win the next two games to win their third consecutive Big Ten series. So it's just kind of been it hasn't been a wildly up and down season. Indiana's winning more than it's losing, and I think probably the Hoosiers came close to notching a couple of really big RPI wins in the non-conference before they really got into Big Ten play. But unfortunately, obviously missed out on those, and so that'll have NCAA tournament sort of seeding ramifications. But broadly speaking, Indiana's scoring runs in bunches. They are in love with the long ball, obviously. I think they're getting better pitching than probably I expected them to at this point, just because of, you know, kind of knowing what they'd lost and there being some questions about, you know, if guys were ready to step into bigger roles and things like that. But it being the first season under a new coach and you know, that being a real sort of transition period that probably for, and I'm not taking anything away from what Chris Lemonis did, but probably a transition period a little bit rougher than what Lemonis had to go through when he took over from Tracy Smith, just in terms of sort of the talent that was lost in that transition and that sort of thing. I think the season's going well, and I think there's every chance that Indiana can play its way back into the NCAA tournament again this season. But as it always, for whatever reason, seems to work out this way, their May is huge. They have a three-game. Their last series of April is three with Minnesota at home. Then they begin May with three at Illinois. They go to Kentucky. They have three at Michigan. And then they play Louisville at home. And, like, that's right there is kind of both make or break a potential sort of push for a Big Ten title, or even to just kind of be mixed up right there at the top of the Big Ten standing. Those are some of the best teams in the league. And it's also going to be an opportunity to get, if they can, stockpile a bunch of big RPI wins really late in the year. And anybody who doesn't know a lot about college baseball, RPI is in some ways the end-all be-all when it comes to NCAA tournament selection. So it's kind of been a hot and cold year. I'd say it's been a good year given it's Jeff Mercer's first year. And it's just a question of how much better Indiana can get as it approaches May.
Zach Hosterman, Indianapolis Star, Little IU Baseball, in our conversation as well. I clearly, obviously, want to get to some basketball stuff with you. Last week we talked about some departures from the team and possibilities for what Indiana could do to fill some of those open scholarships. Since then, Romeo Langford announced, or at least told ESPN, that he's going to declare for the NBA draft. And also, I think the bombshell, at least to me in that, was not that he was going to declare for the draft, but that he had surgery that same day on his hand. I don't think you were surprised by the announcement that he's going to go to the draft, but were you surprised by the fact that he had surgery and a hand injury was revealed, or did you have any inkling of that during the season? What was your take on that when that came out through Jonathan Givony with ESPN?
I think we all presumed there was something there because he had the wrap on his hand, you know, pretty much, I think, from kind of late November onward. So I think we all presumed there was something going on. It was never fully stated, and obviously he played through it. And I think, you know, just given the depth and breadth of Indiana's injury crisis this season, we were probably all sort of more consumed with figuring out what was going on with the guys who couldn't play than the ones who were playing. But, it didn't surprise me a ton to find out that there was something there that required some postseason attention. And, obviously the decision itself came as no surprise. I don't think it will have come as any kind of surprise to R.G. Miller, to his staff, to anyone at Cook Hall, or, you know, anyone really in Bloomington who's got their head screwed on tight and straight. Romeo Langford is, I mean, he's a player of that caliber. He's a guy who is just genuinely good at a level and has potential at a level that very, very, very few players his age ever will. And, you know, I don't know if – I think it's definitely possible that this past season saw his draft stock get depressed at least a little bit by performances and also a little bit by, you know, just attaching kind of what Romeo was able to do to what how he was able to impact Indiana's fortunes and those sorts of things, and now obviously playing – you know, potentially through this injury. But one way or the other, I think that, anybody who felt really surprised by this probably wasn't paying enough attention. And anybody who feels that Romeo Langford isn't ready for the NBA, I think what I'd probably say is, number one, you know, go look at the contracts we're talking about for these kids. It's not even like a modestly impressive. It's life changing, and it's an opportunity that if you had it in your career field anywhere in college, you would have and should have taken it. And the other thing I would say too is, I think that there's sometimes in college basketball fandom this fallacy that players stop developing in the pros. If anything, I think a lot of times players develop more as they get into the NBA. They have more time to work on their games, more sort of dedicated attention paid to it. And Romeo Langford's going to be, in my mind, the kind of player that NBA teams are going to look at and say, we think that we can take all those tools he has, and when we get a hold of him, we can make it work.
We're talking with Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Stars. Zach is with us on Mondays. I was reading your story about Romeo's departure, and all this I've known, we've talked about, but you go through, and with Langford leaving, who obviously was a key contributor for Indiana as just a freshman, but with also the two transfers in Moore and Forrester, plus the departure by graduation of Juwan Morgan and Evan Fitzner losing their eligibility or graduating their eligibility, and walk-on Zach McRoberts, who, you know, at times was really played key minutes for the Indiana team. That's five scholarship players plus McRoberts that must be replaced for next season. I know there's some key returning players, as I guess it's fair to call them key, but some guys that logged at least considerable minutes this year that are back that might be put into some different roles as far as scoring and leadership and ball handling and things like that, but also some incoming freshmen, specifically Trace Jackson Davis. I know we're excited to see what he can do as a freshman. I bring that up, Zach, because this is an Indiana roster that is in influx right now with how those three open scholarships could be filled, whether it's 2019 high school guys, whether it's graduate transfers, however those could fill. But it's also in a state of flux as far as maybe who's going to do what and how things will change and how roles and responsibility and Archie Miller will shore things up, I guess, for next season.
No, I think that – I use the term fascinating offseason in the sort of the final words of my season postmortem, and I'll stand by that between now and October. There's a lot there for Archie Miller to work with, certainly, even as, you know, you mentioned Trace Jackson Davis there. You also mentioned, obviously, what's outgoing. And I don't want to say that, like, the transfers of Clifton Moore and Jake Forrester weren't a surprise. So much as I think what I would say is that transfers, you know, every college coach is going to know that transfers are just part of the reality of the sport in 2019. And so you kind of have to factor in for the possibility of guys moving on, even if they, you know, have eligibility left or whatever. From Indiana's perspective, there are tools for Archie Miller to work with there, both guys coming back like Devontae Green, Al Durham, Justin Smith, Deron Davis, Rob Fennessy, you know, potentially Jerome Hunter, if Indiana can get everything squared away with his health. I think that's a big one that, frankly, people are kind of overlooking. I mean, like maybe pretty significantly overlooking. If you know, Archie Miller can kind of get Hunter back to a good place with his health and his fitness and all those sorts of things. Trace Jackson Davis coming in. I'm quietly really intrigued by Armand Franklin. He seems like one of those guys whose ranking and I have a ton of respect as well established for the guys who put together the recruiting rankings, but there are sometimes players whose ranking and then whose performances just don't quite seem to line up. And I feel that way a little bit with Armand Franklin. He was City Player of the Year in Indianapolis. That's not an easy thing to do. And to put up the numbers he did playing for Cathedral against the kind of opposition that he was playing against, again, not an easy thing to do. But this is also a roster that, you know, went, 19-16 this year, lost in the third round of the NIT, and is now having to replace its top two scorers, top two rebounders, top two minutes guys, top two possessions used players. That's a really, really steep challenge. And I think that from Indiana's perspective, from Archie Miller's perspective, how Archie Miller approaches retooling this roster in the offseason, which already had some things to fix and now obviously, as expected, loses some really key pieces, it's going to go a long way, you feel like, toward determining whether or not the arc of this rebuild under Archie Miller really can take a sharp upward turn in year three, which is about the time that Archie started to get the results at Dayton that made him one of the best young coaches in America. I mean, you know, year three was the Elite Eight season. I'd have to go back and look at their win totals, but I think they finished that regular season with 22 or 23 wins. That was the year where they were something like 11-5, and then they just tore off a huge run at the end of their season and won like 14 of their last 16 games or something like that, and then went all the way to the Elite Eight in the NCAA tournament. So on the one hand, I don't think it's all doom and gloom for Archie Miller in Indiana. On the other, you know, I do think that there is a lot of work to be done and probably not a ton of margin for error on this roster in terms of figuring out where, you know, replacing Romeo Langford's and Juwan Morgan's impact is going to come from, how guys can continue to get better, if some guys can turn a corner from last season to this one and step into much bigger roles, and if Indiana can start to compete at a level that obviously its fans expect, and I think it's fair to say Archie Miller expects as well.
Zach Osterman, the Indianapolis Star, always with us Mondays. He gets the week started with lots of great information. Zach, as always, thanks for the chat. Appreciate it, and we'll talk with you again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, as always.
Absolutely. Zach Osterman, Indianapolis Star, with us. And again, you can read more of Zach's work, a lot of the things we talk about at indystar.com/sports. Zach is the IU beat writer for the Indianapolis Star. I'll head to a quick commercial break. When we come back, Chad Gilbert, he's Charlestown's athletic director, also an IHSA executive board member. We'll talk some local sports headlines. We'll also talk the Final Four and the national championship game tonight. Coming up next, right here on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach, who got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back on this Monday program. Chad Gilbert, Charlestown's athletic director and an IHSA executive board member, he's with us on this Monday program each week as we talk a lot of local sports and a lot of basketball. Chad, we'll start with basketball. Final Four games over the weekend just continued what's been a tremendous, one of the best that I think I have ever seen, NCAA tournaments. And, of course, the Virginia-Auburn game, really just unbelievable. The ending to that game, the missed call, the missed double dribble, the foul on the three-point shot, and then, of course, former Indiana Mr. Basketball, as only Jim Nance can say, setting the scene for three free throws with under a second, what was it, 0.6 or 0.5 seconds left. And I just knew that Kyle Guy was going to hit not just one or two, but three of those to put Virginia ahead in that really pressure-packed situation. But that was a game. That was a crazy, crazy game. And if you're Virginia, you are fortunate and celebrating and moving on to the national championship. And, of course, if you're Auburn and your friend Coach Pearl, just really a devastating loss, to be quite honest. I can't imagine dealing with that with your team and, of course, as the coach as well. But, wow, what a game. What a start to the Final Four and the national championship weekend.
It's been a great tournament, Matt. All the games have been exciting. It's like we talked about last week. When you're watching a game by yourself and you start clapping, you know the games are exciting. And this weekend was no different. You know, it was a tough, tough loss for Coach Pearl and those guys. You know, it was one of those games that was kind of deflated to even watch the second game. You know, and you kind of feel like you're going to wake up and like, this is a bad dream. I don't have anything invested in that game at all. I know Coach Pearl. I know Stephen Pearl on the bench. And before the tournament, I could name you three players on Auburn. You know, during the season, I'd watch them. I'd say, oh, they shoot too many threes for me. I can't watch this. I can't get into it. But as the tournament went, the excitement grew. The way that Coach Pearl's team were playing, they were able to knock off anybody. And you saw that. They were on the ropes going down against Virginia, and they come on a 14-0 run and fought back. And Coach Pearl is a smart guy. You know, BP, he always twists things. And he will use this as a teachable moment. His team will not be defined by that game. That kid who fouled him, he will not be defined by that game. What they will be defined by is how they came together with their best player tearing his ACL, how they made a run, and how they had a chance, how they played in the Final Four, you know, which every coach dreams of. And you have to learn from adversity to do that, and we'll talk about that in just a second. But they'll remember how they came together and accomplished the goals of getting to the Final Four, of one loss away from the national championship. But as far as, you know, the officiating, the guy who made the calls from Louisville, an excellent official. And, you know, the guys that are doing these Final Four games, they just don't draw them out of a hat. Those are the best of the best out there. And the guy, you know, when he makes that call at the end, that was definitely a foul. But like BP said in the press conference, that's a foul at the start of the game. That's a start foul at the middle of the game. That's a foul at the end of the game. And the way that game went on, neither team was in the bonus. So that was a quick game. Games got on and went with it, but it went on to – that play did not cost them the game. You think about it, you think about the Purdue game against Virginia. Think about the Auburn game against Virginia. Both guys had – the free throw shooters, they want on the line to ice the game. Both guys missed one of the free throws and gave Virginia an opportunity to win, and they took advantage of the opportunity. Now, talk about Virginia for a second. My goodness, Matt, you want to talk about it? It's like the old Aerosmith song, you got to lose to know how to win. I mean, that's what they did last year. People forget. A one seed has never been beat by a 16 seed before. That happened last year for Virginia. That would have been real easy for Tony Bennett, for his team to just pack up camp and go. You know, the year before we won it, 2010, we got beat by Floyd Central. We were 20-2. Floyd Central beat us at their place twice by 1 point. We were ready to camp. You know, I told assistant coaches, I don't know if I can do this anymore. And that stuff just beats you up. You know, but you got to rally around it. You do, like I said, that Coach Pearl's going to do. You make a positive out of the negative. And that makes you that much more hungry. And if we wouldn't have gotten beat by Floyd Central that year, I'm not sure we would have won it in 2011. And same thing with Tony Bennett. They've dodged some bullets, but they've got the basketball gods on their side, and they've made plays. But, you know, you think about that. Kyle Guy steps up to the line in front of 80,000 people live, not counting the people that are watching on TV, and hits three free throws. Unbelievable. Unbelievable that he's able to do that on such a big stage. It's something that everybody dreams about, but not many can do.
Chad, you kind of hit on a lot of those points about Kyle Guy that I was going to mention or ask you about. But when this is all said and done, especially if Virginia goes on tonight to win the national championship, which is definitely possible, but Texas Tech is playing really, really well. I want to get your pick here in just a moment. But if he goes on, especially to win the national championship, and really even if he doesn't, but let's say it's a storybook ending and they do, when you put some clips, some memories together, just of his last two seasons, of course, the year you mentioned where one-seeded Virginia got beat by UMBC, 16-seed, first time ever a year ago, and then Virginia going all the way to the national championship, perhaps winning it tonight, Kyle Guy knocking down an unbelievable, pressure-packed three free throws to win the game for Virginia when it looked like they were defeated. What a career, what a college career, what a storybook. If you were writing you could make a movie on it. You could write a book about it. And again, if they win it, that caps everything off. But still unbelievable where he was at, where Virginia was at a year ago to start the tournament, and where they're at on this Monday national championship day.
Well, make no mistake, Kyle Guy's a dude, man. He can play. And, you know, he's a McDonald's All-American. He's a Mr. Basketball. They just don't hand those things out. Third-team All-American this year. He's just a junior. But, you know, for what he's done, what he's accomplished, you think about that. Purdue had them on the ropes, and he comes out in the second half and just bang, 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 different ball game. And that kid is just an outstanding player. I mean, he gets up so high on his jump shot. He knows how to play. And that whole team of Virginia, you know, you want to talk about some dudes, they got some dudes. They all know their role well. They play well off each other, and they do what it takes to win. You know, you talked about who you're going to pick on it. It'd be hard-pressed for me to pick against Virginia. I think they look very good. I think they've got that on their side. And then the winner, whoever's won the region at the Yum Center the last two times, has went on to win the national championship. I look for that to hold true again tonight. You know, just an outstanding ball club for Virginia. But take nothing away from Texas Tech. They're going to get in you, and they're going to guard you, and they're going to get after you.
And, Chad, I call you an old-school coach. You're not that old, but you've been around and grown up in Indiana with a family where basketball is so important and really old-school, you know, type environment. How refreshing is it?
And this is why I'm a little bit torn, because I love Kyle Guy. I love Coach Bennett. I love Virginia. I love their story. But I'm a little bit torn because you see a team like Texas Tech, and really Virginia as well, but that pride themselves on defense. And that's something that I think at some of the top levels of basketball today, that everybody wants to look at the dunks and the great shooting and all that sort of thing, but no one necessarily wants to go back and look at defensive highlights and think, wow, there's a reason that this team is getting some of the offensive opportunities they are. There's a reason this team is beating some of the teams that they are, and a lot of it for Texas Tech has been defensive because of defensive reasons, which I think is, as a basketball purist and fan, is quite refreshing, really.
If you get a chance, there's an article on Twitter, and it talked about both the defenses, how they both play great defenses, but how their defenses are a little bit different. You know, Chris Beard is he is an old-school Indiana-type coach where you force baseline, everything's predicated off that one, where Tony Bennett is running the pack line where the defense forces you to the middle. And there's different ways to approach that, different ways to do it, but the article is very intriguing. If you get a chance to look that up, and you can see some of the differences. One thing on Chris Beard is a pretty good fact. Lou Godino is a friend of mine. He's the assistant at Wichita State now. He was the associate head coach at Indiana State. We were just talking during these Final Four runs. You know how you have several different groups of text messages going. He gets married now 7-8 years ago, and we're at the wedding just talking. And I said, you know, how close of friends are you with Chris Beard? And, you know, because we're at the wedding having a good time. He said he was the best man in the wedding. And so, you know, that's pretty cool stuff that they have those Indiana ties and have those things that come together. But both those guys, they play very well defense, and offensively they are very efficient as well. So tonight's going to be a great game. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's not going to be a 100-point game, but it's going to be something that you can learn from, you can watch, and you can enjoy.
Thank you, Chad. Enjoy the national championship. We'll talk to you next week.
Appreciate it, Matt. Take care.
That's going to wrap things up for this Monday program. Have a great Monday. We'll be back Tuesday at 11 o'clock. On Tuesday, of course, Greg Doyle of the Indianapolis Star and Mike Pegram of Pegs.com with me. We'll talk to you then right here on the Big X Sports Radio.